This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
And thank you so much, Roxanne. Good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. No theme song today. We're going to get right to it since this is a membership drive, and we have a wonderful guest on the line coming up in a second. My guest is Barbara Ehrenreich. A real quick introduction for you, Barbara. Born in Butte, Montana, which she says was still a bustling, brawling, blue-collar mining town. Father was a miner. And she ended up coming to Portland and going to Reed College and majoring in chemistry. And she decided she would go deeper, as she saw it, to study physics. Ended up in molecular biology, and from that to cell biology. Then she got into political engagement and writing, and has written an astounding number of good books, including more recently what a lot of people probably have read or at least heard of is Bright-Sided, of course, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America, and Bait and Switch. And most recently, she has written this book that we're going to talk about today, Natural Causes, An Epidemic of Wellness, The Certainty of Dying and Killing Ourselves to Live Longer. Good morning, Barbara.
Hi, good to be with you.
It's so good to have you on. So you're going to read a little bit from the beginning of your book, but I just wanted to say that this is just an amazing book. I'm really just kind of absorbing it now and trying to digest it. It really takes many different strands, your personal journey, kind of the story of your generation. It's a scientific journey. Anyway, it seems like that you kind of pick up the thread of your early passion to get to bottom of things scientifically that led you to study chemistry, physics, then molecular and cell biology. And then you weave in many other strands from your long life of writing and political engagement, where you're also trying to get to the bottom of things. But is that kind of how you see it, kind of picking up your early interests?
Well, it was a surprise, in a way, that that the early interest in cell biology, kind of came in handy here in looking at how and why we die and how it's so hard to control that by things like diet and exercise and everything else. So, yeah, so there's both a scientific mystery story here and the point I'm trying to make about getting old and getting ready to die.
Mm-hmm. You have a very wry comment early on that at a certain point you realized it was time that you actually could die, and it's something that there's a lot of we play a lot of tricks about, and you talk about some of these leading lights in Silicon Valley who are seemingly in denial of death and trying to become immortal or something. Anyway, we'll get into all that. Would you like to read the section from the early part of your book?
Well, tell me where it is again, please.
In the introduction. Let me see. It was a page, 14, X1V of the introduction.
Yes.
Though this book cannot be summarized in a sentence or two, down on the third paragraph.
I don't know if I'm seeing that, unless I'm looking at the galleys and the page numbers change.
Aha.
Which is very embarrassing.
Well, that's okay.
But no, it is a hard book to put into a into an elevator speech, as we say. You know, it's I guess if there is an overall idea here, it is that we are going to die, but are we going to spend the last few decades of our lives or maybe the whole last half, trying to ignore that fact and trying to prevent death. Now, of course, we don't do things to encourage it, unless we are daredevils or something. But I was just struck over the years by how much of people's time goes into prolonging their lives, and rather than living their lives.
One thing that I was really struck by, since it resonated in the life of my own life, beginning of my life and life of my family, is you say on your website, in your bio, you talk about with the birth of your first child in 1970, you underwent a political as well as a personal transformation. Bit by bit, you got involved with what we then called the women's health movement. And you have a section where you lay out this damning case of the rise of the control of the medical profession, the male patriarchal medical profession, over childbirth and women's bodies, and how your own your own experience with childbirth and your own kind of coming of age politically led you to really question that. And I want you to maybe talk a little bit, because I my mom, a big part of my own life story is she told me that with my birth, it was the first one after three that she didn't take any drugs, I guess, like she didn't get totally anesthetized, which you also describe. And so I kind of look back that, since I got involved in environmentalism and stuff, I kind of saw that as sort of maybe a harbinger, possibly. Anyway, talk a little bit about how that affected your life.
Well, I'll just tell you one anecdote that sums it up. Towards the end of my first pregnancy, and I was in a clinic. I didn't have a private doctor. There was a sort of ritualized examination by the chief of obstetrics at this hospital I was at. And he did his pelvic exam. And when he looked up, I asked him a question. I said, "Is my cervix beginning to efface?" Now, that if the cervix is effacing, that means you're going to give birth pretty soon. The doctor ignored me. He looked at his nurse and said, and asked her, "Where did a nice girl like this ever learn to talk like that?" Now, I at that time had gotten my PhD in cell biology, and I could have said things that he would have regarded as a lot worse if I wanted to. But it just showed me right then and there, it doesn't matter what your education is, you're a woman, and that means that you are ignorant and inferior and out of place if you try to act differently.
And emblematic of the absolute arrogance of the a lot of science in general, but certainly of the medical profession, that's taken a long time to sort of, and it's still very, very much that way. So talk about what influence that had, how that helped lead to writing this book.
Okay, I did find the paragraph you want me to read. It's on another page, actually. Should I read it?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
"This book cannot be summarized in a sentence or two, but here is a rough roadmap. The first half is devoted to describing the quest for control as it is acted out through medical care, lifestyle adjustments in the areas of exercise and diet, and a nebulous but ever-growing wellness industry that embraces both body and mind. All these forms of intervention invite questions about the limits of human control, which leads us into the realm of biology, what lies within the body, and whether its parts and elements are even susceptible to conscious human control. Do they form a harmonious whole, or are they engaged in perpetual conflict?"
Indeed, this idea of sort of this as you sort of a two different paradigms, as you call it, the utopian and the dystopian, which you say have never had a chance to have it out in open combat. Of course, this is kind of, to understand that, you really have to read the whole book, which again is Natural Causes, An Epidemic of Wellness, The Certainty of Dying and Killing Ourselves to Live Longer. You really have some really challenging ideas and concepts, which obviously, you know, I'm almost 60, you're half a generation or more ahead of me. And it takes would you agree that it takes a long time to really get to a deeper, more nuanced understanding of the way things really work?
Not necessarily.
Yeah. Okay.
Just read this book and there it'll be. And by dystopian, I mean the central idea of alternative medicine. And I go after both regular medicine and alternative medicine here. But the central idea of so many alternative notions is that the body is a harmonious whole, right? Everything works together. If you do certain things or think right or meditate and everything, it will all come out all right. But the evidence is so profoundly against that. There's so many cases in which parts of the body rebel and fight against other parts of the body. One case would be cancer, and then, you know, where a group of cells decide to go on a rampage and reproduce wildly and try to spread all over the body and start new colonies. Another kind of case would be autoimmune disease, where our own immune cells decide to attack different organs of our body. And then aging. Most of the discomforts and problems of aging come from inflammatory processes. What does that mean? That means immune cells going crazy again. Arthritis, cardiovascular disease, so many of these things can be traced to cellular rampages.
That's a very, you almost say, if you know, the idea of natural selection, that you might almost say that we're naturally selected to die, that there's almost a sort of a will to death built in to the system that maybe is involved in some of these mechanisms, or is that a leap?
Well, I you know, the natural selection operates on different levels.
Mm-hmm.
It operates on the level of individuals. Some say it operates also on the level of communities and groups. That's a big debate. But it seems to operate at the level of cells. And some, you know, some cells, cancer cells, naturally select themselves, so to speak, to be able to resist the chemicals that are supposed to destroy them and chemotherapy. So there's a natural resistance going on at that, natural selection going on at that level too.
Mm-hmm. This is just a incredibly complex journey through your life, through the human body, through society, and we're going to pick this up again. We're also in our spring membership drive, and we're time when we call upon you to support the ability to hear the voice of Barbara Ehrenreich, among so many others. And yeah, Barbara, we always like to draw our membership drive guests into the discussion of the value of community radio. We, you know, we're in our 50th anniversary year. We go back to 1968. Do you have any, you know, yourself, obviously, I'm sure you've interacted with community radio and Pacifica Radio, which is our sister stations. What do you see as the value of what we're doing and other community stations are doing?
What other kinds of radio are there?
Indeed.
In the D.C. area where I live, I listen to the NPR affiliate, WAMU, and the Pacifica affiliate, WPFW. And that's about it.
Indeed. I'm sure many of our listeners...
These are close friends of mine, in fact. I get irritated at NPR at times, particularly, and also at WPFW. But you know, these are who I go through my life with.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's true for our listeners listening now, and they know because they listen and support, or maybe you haven't. Maybe you're fairly new to this model of listener-supported radio. The way we keep going is by your support. 877-500-5266. That is the number. So, you know, this book is informed by so many, as I said, so many rich strands of your own life, your generation's life, past scholarship, really recent cutting edge scientific developments. You just pull everything into this book. It's truly a book that is worth taking some time to spend with, I find. Anyway, so your observations of critiques of the wellness industry, the medical establishment come, you know, you talked about your own childbirth, how that led you to look at the medical establishment, but you also had your own very long, intensive experience with the wellness industry, which I thought was very interesting. Your own realization that you needed to do perhaps more than just sit and write books, and so you got involved in going to the gym. Talk a little bit about your experience, because I'm sure that resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't really, I don't think I was being sucked in to the wellness industry by going to the gym. It was more like I had discovered something that I missed from my childhood. You know, the ability to run around, climb trees, do things like that. And adulthood seemed to be about sitting for me as a sedentary worker. It's not for manual labors, but so I just felt like, I can do it again. I can use my body. I can push my body. Of course, in the somewhat corporate environment of the gym, not in the woods or the fields, but that was very important to me. And I became really into it for quite a long while. In fact, I was a show-off. You know, I would do things in the gym that were, I now realize, a little bit reckless, but that, you know, would impress. I would do them to impress men. Let's put it that way. I would love to be able to get into a weight machine right after a guy had been working out on it and immediately raise the weight, preferably while he was watching. Now, I don't know what that says about me. I don't think I'm like that in most realms of life. But, you know, it became a very important part of my day, insofar as I could squeeze it in.
And of course, being such a, if I may say, a keen observer, it led you to many further insights. And the whole idea of sort of the conscious control, it led you to this long sort of questioning of the idea of conscious control, the mind control, and then you get into the whole mindfulness. Talk a little bit about that's a bit of a later chapter, how you talk about those insights.
Well, very central to the holistic alternative sorts of medicine, if you could call them that, has been the idea of getting the mind in control of the body, right? You know, I can do it, I can exercise, I can eat the right things, maybe think the right thoughts, and I, you know, my body will become as perfect as it can be. But what if you can't trust your mind? And that question came up very wrenchingly in the early OOs, because, you know, there was this awareness of an epidemic of inattentiveness, an epidemic of distraction, that scientists found that the attention span of the human adult in this country was shorter than that of a goldfish. And why? Well, the culprit is probably our devices. You know, I'm into this. I do this myself. I have my iPad. I have my cell phone. I'm constantly interacting and getting different sorts of messages, information, and so on. My granddaughters, it's hard to get their noses out of their phones to actually have a conversation with them. So there was this big alarm about 15, 20 years ago about what is happening to our minds. And that led via Silicon Valley, because that was the place that hatched it, to the creation of or invention of mindfulness, that we could regain our powers of concentration by little smidgens of meditation here and there.
I'm sorry to interrupt you with that, because I know that's going to lead to a whole other train of thought. Let's just hold that for just a second, and also would like to remind our listeners once again that this is our spring membership drive. We come to you three times a year to ask for use. For those of you who aren't already supporting us on a yearly basis by, say, giving $10, $12, $15 a month, which is an easy way. And if a lot more people did that, we might not even have to do these fundraising drives. So keep that in mind. But we do need to raise some $100,000+ for this drive. And we'd like to go a lot further with the help of Abe, also with us, to ask you to call 877-500-5266.
Hey, thanks, Paul. And thank you for a wonderful show this morning. It's been fascinating back here listening to it. Barbara just mentioned a phrase that I felt compelled to write down and underline a couple times, and that was epidemic of distraction. And boy, truer words may have never been spoken here on Wednesday Talk Radio at KBOO 90.7 FM. We are indeed living through an epic of distraction. And I'm here to tell you right now that KBOO is the antidote to the epidemic of distraction. We offer programming that challenges you to pay attention, that challenges you to rise to the level of discourse being placed before you. The contrast between what you're hearing now on this program with a guest like Barbara Ehrenreich, you compare that to what you hear on commercial talk radio, and the difference could not be more stark. I don't know about you, but the choice is clear to me. Pick up the phone right now and become a member of KBOO by dialing 1-877-500-5266. And let me remind you, if you're enjoying what you're hearing from Barbara Ehrenreich this morning and you would like to learn more about what she's talking about, we have for you 5 copies of her book, Natural Causes, awaiting the next group of people to call up and become members of KBOO at the $60 minimum contribution level. That is $5 a month. $5. That is maybe one less latte. That's maybe, one less of whatever vice you've got kicking around in your life. It's really not a whole lot. You will hardly miss it, and you will be glad that you did it. And there is more. I know that many of you who listen to KBOO love to do so because of the kind of public news and public affairs program you're hearing right now on Wednesday Talk Radio. But I know that perhaps even more of you tune in for the incredible variety of musical programming that we offer around the clock on KBOO. And right now, you can scratch that itch. If you call up and become a member of KBOO right now, you will be entered into a drawing to win $300 to spend at Mississippi Records. And that is compelling, let me tell you. The selection, ranging from the mainstream to the eclectic at Mississippi Records, is staggering, and that's $300 you can splash on a bunch of fat vinyl. And I know that that has some appeal for you out there. So pick up the phone to dial 877-500-5266. Become a member of Portland's listener-supported radio station, KBOO. Like to thank Karen in Portland, Steve in Lebanon, and Terry in St. Paul, all of whom called up to renew their memberships to KBOO. We love renewing members because that shows us that you truly value the investment that you have made in this radio station to the extent that you're willing to renew it and keep it going to help sustain what comes out of your speakers each and every day from this station. But you know, as much as we love our renewing members, I think we like new members even more. Why? Because that tells us that what we're doing is gaining traction out there amongst you, the listeners. We don't have exact statistics, but it's generally assumed in the world of community-supported radio that there's a whole lot more of you out there listening who are not members than there are members. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean that you're a freeloader. It doesn't mean that you're taking a free ride, but it means that you can take that extra step, that you can do a little bit more, that you can decide to consciously become a part of this vibrant community that is KBOO, the community that binds the rest of Portland together. And it's really easy. 877-500-5266. Reach out and close that circuit. Bridge that gap. Cross that gulf. It's not hard. It's easy. And I'm thinking, if you enjoy what's coming out of your speakers right now, if you enjoy the kind of discourse that you hear between Paul and Barbara this morning, it's something that you want to do. It's something that will make you feel good. It's something you'll be proud about. It's something that you can carry forth with you as you walk through the streets of this community, knowing that you are part of something that has been here for 50 years. KB was born in that tumultuous year, 1968, and we have reached our 50th birthday in an almost equally tumultuous year, 2018. We don't know what the future is bringing, but you can count on the fact that this radio station will give you the straight dirt, whatever it happens to be. So with that, pick up the phone, call 877-500-5266, and we'll kick it back right now to Paul and Barbara.
And thank you so much, Abe. Once again, we really do appreciate your support, and I hope more people call and offer the contribution that would get them natural causes. This is just, it's really a mind blower, this book. I got to say, I really getting a lot out of it.
Paul, maybe I could remind, and I don't know if you know this, but I'm going to be in Portland on May 1st, May Day. Is that next week? Yeah, next week. At Powell's at 7:30 in the evening.
Thank you so much. I had that on my list, and I was remiss. You're going to be at Powell's downtown, the Powell City of Books on Burnside, West Burnside Street, 7:30 on Tuesday, May 1st. And your old fellow Reed student, Joe Uris, is going to be introducing you, I believe.
Well, we're going to be in conversation.
Oh, I didn't get that. Even more interesting.
And yes, because I graduated from Reed, and I have a lot of roots in Portland.
Uh-huh. And, of course, Abe Proctor, our who's with us with the membership drive, is the co-host with Joe Uris on Tuesday Talk Radio. One big circle. So let's get back to this. Again, there's just not enough time in this program to talk about. So we're talking about mindfulness, and you're talking about Silicon Valley. There's just something really perverse about, to me, about the some of these entrepreneurs who, you know, kind of came out of your generation or maybe a little after, and, you know, kind of came out of the whole 60s wave of sort of do-it-yourself, but they took it in a very different direction. This whole self-help generation of the 70s sort of coincided with a sort of computer tech boom. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, with mindfulness, it's so amazing. We came to the conclusion that what was causing the epidemic of distraction was our devices. In other words, it was all emanating from Silicon Valley, the whole problem. So Silicon Valley came up with a solution to sell us, and that is mindfulness. And the way Silicon Valley nurtured this idea, you know, holds conferences on this idea, it's almost, you know, it's like a sign of virtue, upper class virtue. to be mindful, whatever that means, in practice. And so they started making apps. How could you get mindful? Use an app. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of them now, mindfulness apps for sale. And they offer, like, very brief, and they're essentially timers. You get, maybe you get some sort of music and on your phone, and then some, you know, calendar scenery and things like that. And then a timer is set, like, for 1 minute, and during which you meditate. Or if you want to really get into it, 2 minutes. And all the, it offends me. I'm not a Buddhist, but I recognize that there is something very sacred about Buddhism that is totally removed from the mindfulness movement, and that is the notion of enlightenment. Oh, mindfulness is just about getting better at what you do, getting better at your job, and so forth. Buddhism is something else.
Yeah, there's seems to be a general superficialization, a cultural superficialization that is sort of overtaken us. And you mentioned kind of briefly, you know, you point to Jerry Rubin as sort of one of these apostles of the self-help turn after the 60s, which he was such a, you know, sort of a very public face of being with the yippies. You mentioned the sort of that part of this kind of comes out of the defeat of sort of the collective aspect to the aspect of struggle and trying to really grapple with through conflict with the contradictions of American society and its aggression, its imperialism, its consumerism. And you kind of just sort of briefly say that Abbie Hoffman, the partner of Jerry Rubin, committed suicide, but Jerry Rubin went this other direction, and ironically, you point out later in the book, was struck down. It's not funny, but was struck down crossing a street at a young age. Anyway, yeah, talk a little bit about a little bit more about this idea of the defeat of the 1960s and how
that's really the idea of, that comes from Christopher Lash, the historian who wrote the book "The Culture of Narcissism" in the 1970s, and the way he put it was that all this stuff about fitness, wellness hadn't quite come along yet, all this preoccupation with one's health and one's body represented a retreat from political activism. That was Christopher Lash's theory. And the perfect case study was Jerry Rubin, who, had been and a very important activist. Someone I thought was a little narcissistic himself, but, was a leader. And then at some point in the 70s, he just turned completely into health, wellness. He tried every alternative modality that there is. He waltzed and, I can't even think of all the things that he did, and nevertheless died young in a car accident. But it was like we tried changing the world. It was too hard. So what can we change? Our bodies. We can, I understood that very, very well, or I understand it in the gym. I can't do a hell of a lot about Donald Trump, but I can certainly make my quads stronger and my triceps stronger, et cetera. That's my realm of control. So I understand that myself. It becomes a kind of a retreat. And then when you throw in mindfulness and you throw in wellness and special ointments for your skin and so on, you got a full-time job with that. You don't have time for any kind of political activism.
Which, of course, is sort of the defeat of, again, the collective impulses, which weren't the only impulses of the 1960s, but there certainly was maybe the last time in our history that we've had a strong sort of communal thrust, which was really just finding its way when it sort of kind of all fell apart. But this is a long, deep discussion we're having here with Barbara Ehrenreich. I think we have a couple callers. I know it's really difficult to do all this during membership drive, but let's go to a one caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Hello. Hi, this is Sunny. Barbara Ehrenreich, you're one of my cultural heroes. Thank you for your book, Nickel and Dimed, in which you brought to our country's attention the fact that not only do poor people exist, but everything's being sucked right out of their bones. The fact that poor people have to pay a higher price oftentimes for the same items and everything. So thank you so much. And in doing that, you did something very important, because you told a giant population, an increasing population of people, that you exist. I, Barbara Ehrenreich, a very powerful mind and heart, see what's happening to you. And when you had that doctor looking at you in that important moment when you're trying to find out how things are going with your pregnancy, and then he turns and he talks to that woman like, you're just not there. You're just not there.
Yep.
That's a big part of the problem. And this technology that has been put into the hands of our children is trancing us out of existence. Everybody's.
Okay, Sunny, we're going to have to...
losing existence. So thank you, Ms. Ehrenreich. Thank you very much. Thank you for all your hard work for us. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I hadn't put that all together in my own head. You give me something to think about.
Well, interesting. I don't know if you heard Barbara talking about Nickel and Dime, that one of the first fast food unions was just recognized at one Burgerville restaurant here in Portland just, I believe, yesterday, the day before.
Burgerville or Burger King?
Burgerville, which is a Northwest chain.
Oh, I see. Well, great.
Anyway, just thought I'd throw that in there. So, we're talking about a lot of different things. You talk about the self again, this idea of the, you come to some really, what I think are, to a lot of people, possibly dramatic conclusions, which sort of fly in the face of what has seemingly become our common sense, in the cutting to kind of the last chapter of your book, Killing the Self, Rejoicing in a Living World. Want to talk a little bit about that?
I could talk forever about that, or maybe not at all would be the correct Buddhist response, but... Yeah, we have a peculiar culture, as Christopher Lash was pointing out, that is narcissistic, where we center on ourselves. The self is a relatively new concept historically. It goes back about 400 years. The idea that each of us is a special little unit set off from other people, a kind of a self, you know, that we have to guard and take care of. And in our culture, not only guard and take care of, but love and pamper and constantly obsess about. Now, I don't even know what that means. How can I love myself? Who's the lover? Who's the loved one? You know, I can't separate myself into that kind of a duality. But anyway, that's our notion, the self is supreme. And that's what's so scary, ultimately, about dying. Not just that the body falls apart and decomposes and everything, but the self will no longer exist. My self will not. Yours will not. And Susan Sontag once observed very wisely that the only way to think about dying would be to get away from that notion of the self, the I. Now, as her son has written, she couldn't do that herself and kept pursuing more and more exotic forms of care for her cancer, the cancer that finally killed her. But she had a point. I cannot face dying, and that is the end of myself, without realizing that, hey, the rest of the world is going to go on fine, just fine, without me.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking again with Barbara Ehrenreich. Her new book, Natural Causes, An Epidemic of Wellness, The Certainty of Dying and Killing Ourselves to Live Longer, is just out recently, and she will be in town next Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. at the Downtown Powell's Books in conversation with our own Joe Uris. That should be really something. You can meet Barbara, get a copy of her book, and we encourage you to call right now to get your copy of her book and through and support community radio all at the same time by calling 877-500-5266. You know, this is a collective enterprise that's lasted now 50 years and continues to advance the causes of the Burgerville workers and so many others. And this is your opportunity to join in this collective enterprise. And thank you so much, Abe. You know, I must apologize. I know people have been trying to call in and get their questions or comments to Barbara Ehrenreich. I apologize. I feel like I've kind of been hogging you all to myself. And it's true. I just have so much I want to talk to you about with this incredible book, Natural Causes. I encourage everybody. So anyway, it is difficult during membership drive to do everything. We try to do it as much as we can here at KBOO, but now we are focused a lot on keeping the station going. This is a crucial thing to do. Of course, 877-500-5266. So in the couple minutes we have left here, Barbara, I know this is you are a passionate observer. You go back to your early passion for science in this new book, Natural Causes. You're also very passionate and engaged politically. So what do you want people to take away from with this book you wrote?
Well, I want people to relax, for one thing. Stop obsessing about everything you put in your mouth. Stop, thinking, well, if I work out on the treadmill for 30 minutes, maybe I'll live 3 minutes longer. Do things that are important to you, especially if you're over 50 or as old as I am, which is 76. You want to do things that are important and to you in a very central way. For me, that means primarily political kinds of things. I founded a project a few years ago called the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. And what we do is we try to nurture and give a shove to younger writers, poor writers. There's no shortage, by the way, of poor journalists. And raise money to help them and then help get their work placed in as prominent places as we can. For me, this is, it's very personally central, because it's a way in which I am reproducing myself. I want young journalists, younger than myself anyway, and I want to give them a start. They can take my place. They'll do what I've done, or better.
Well, not to single anybody out, but are there any particular stories of people that have been helped through this project that you'd like to share?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. We have, one of them was in Portland, Donnell Alexander, who wrote about music. He's an African-American guy. He became homeless at a certain point and was actually, he was writing music reviews at the time, and he was writing them and submitting them on his cell phone because he had no laptop. So we come across this guy who's a gifted writer, and began to finance his work and get him in places like Rolling Stone and most recently Fast Company. Well, I think he did that all by himself. So, you know, he's on a roll. And he's just a brilliant guy. That he's not in Portland right now. He's in California. But I hope he'll go back.
Mm-hmm. So, and then the name of this project again?
Economic Hardship Reporting Project. Just look at our website, which is an archive of all the great things, not only stories, but videos and, you know, photo essays that we have helped bring into the world.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I maybe the last thing, this the whole culture of distraction, obviously, you mentioned finding it difficult to do anything about Donald Trump. But, you know, in some ways, this really is sort of the apotheosis of a lot of the things you've been talking about. Hopefully, kind of the denouement, the end game of this whole sordid process is, I guess, the way that I sort of keep myself going to think about it. What, any reflections on that?
Well, I'll tell you what gives me a lot of hope is my granddaughters, and they're just representative of a generation in their early teens who are activists, you know, who have been, I can't even count the demonstrations they've been to in the last year, the year of Trump, with other people their age. It's not just the Parkland students. It's kids all over. So that gives, you know, that's what gives me a lot of hope.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And those are all things that we cover here on KBOO Community Radio. Once again, Barbara Ehrenreich, your book, Natural Causes, An Epidemic of Wellness, The Certainty of Dying and Killing Ourselves to Live Longer. But there's so many others. I mean, this really kind of resonates with Brightside. Oh, one more thing. I'm going to be interviewing your colleague on the Boffler, Chris Lehman. Any quick plug you'd like to give for his book? It's a couple years old now, but we're going to be talking about that next week on my show, The Money Cult.
Who wrote The Money Cult again?
Your colleague, Chris Lehman.
Oh, Chris Lehman, of course. Chris Lehman is the editor of The Baffler, which is becoming less obscure as a journal, and it's been a great home for me. The Baffler, if you know anything you think is weird about my book, Natural Causes, it was enabled by The Baffler. Including by Chris Lehman, to say, oh, yeah, that's interesting. Write about that. So, yes, I adore Chris.
Okay, and that'll be coming up next week. And that and so many other great things here on Community Radio. We're going to go out with more discussion about the importance of KBOO Community Radio. Thank you so much for joining us, Barbara Ehrenreich. We really appreciate it.
It was fun.
Oh, great. And again, 7:30 p.m. next Tuesday at Powell's Books, to get to see and hear her in person, along with Joe Uris,